A diagnosis of breast cancer can cause a life-changing ripple effect of impact, affecting those we love most and those upon whom we lean for comfort and strength in the most challenging of times. My name is Aisling Hurley and I'm the CEO of Breast Cancer Ireland, and you are listening to More Than a Lump, a podcast that talks openly and honestly to a selection of guests about their very personal connections to breast cancer, be it through their career choice, their own first-hand experience of the disease, or through sharing the experience of close family members. My conversations will centre on how breast cancer has informed their perspective on life, love, family, health, their goals, and indeed their aspirations. Although each story is utterly unique, the one common thread that runs through each one is that breast cancer is more than a lump. This episode of More Than a Lump is proudly supported by GoodBody, a leading financial services firm that has been serving and growing client relationships for nearly 150 years. Breast Cancer Ireland is one of the strategic charity partners that GoodBody works with in an effort to provide educational resources and financial support. At the age of 36, Denise Ash was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. Although an enormous shock from the start, Denise was determined that cancer was not going to hold her back from living her best life. And so as we launch this year's Great Pink Run, which takes place on October 9th in Dublin, October 16th in Kilkenny Castle Park, and which can be done virtually in between, I'm delighted to welcome Denise here today to talk about how exercise and running has played a big role in her recovery. Denise is joined today by nutritionist Orla Walsh. Orla kindly provided us with a set of nutritional tips to help prepare for the event, and we will chat through these tips as well as talk about other dietary concerns those diagnosed could have. Ladies, you're both very welcome here today, and thank you for agreeing to be part of More Than a Lump podcast. Before we focus on preparing for the Great Pink Run, I wonder if I could turn to you, Denise, and ask you to share with our listeners a little bit about your own story. Take us back to that June 2017 when you did find that lump.
Thank you, Aisling, and thank you very much for inviting me onto your podcast. I'm delighted to be here. So back in 2017, it was actually April, I found a lump in my breast. Wasn't overly concerned about it. So I had a lump in my left breast. A few years beforehand, I had a lump in my right breast. So that turned out to be a fluid-filled abscess. So I wasn't overly concerned. Mm-hmm. It was remedied with a course of antibiotics at the time. So I thought maybe something similar again. Mm-hmm. So I went to see my GP. She examined me and she decided to put me on a course of antibiotics. So 2 weeks later, I had finished the course of antibiotics. The pain had subsided, but the lump had remained. Mm-hmm. And if anything, it got a bit bigger. So I was sitting in work one day and I thought, gosh, you know, do I leave it maybe or what do I do? So I made a call to my GP's office and spoke to the secretary, got a call back from GP asking me to come in. Mm-hmm. So I went over to Dunshaughlin Medical Centre. Breda Clifford is my GP. She's an incredible lady and I owe a lot to her. Breda examined me and I kind of knew by the expression on her face that she was a little bit concerned. Mm. She's a breast cancer survivor herself. Okay. So she was very aware. She sent me up to St. Vincent's Hospital for further consultation. So went up to Vincent's. It was a few weeks later. I kind of put it to the back of my mind. Didn't really think much of it. Got up to Vincent's and had a triple assessment. This was all new to me. I had no idea. I thought this was all, you know, what you do.
Yeah.
So I had a triple assessment. I suppose for anybody that doesn't know what that is, it's a mammogram, an ultrasound and a biopsy. Mm. So I had to obviously leave and wait for results. I think it was a week, maybe 2 weeks later, mm-hmm. went back up for the results. And at that stage, I was told they were inconclusive. Janice Walsh was the oncologist that I was dealing with there, and she had told me that there was a sign of a cancer showing. Mm. So at that stage, there was mention of cancer, but I still naively didn't kind of, you know, I wasn't fazed really by it. Mm-hmm. I was kind of like, no, I don't think so. That doesn't happen to me, you know. So I had, I think it was two or three more biopsies that day, and I was bandaged up. And at that point, my only concern was, whether I could go into the mosh pit in Slane. I was going to Guns N' Roses a couple of days later, and that was my biggest concern at the time. So off I went. Now, a few days later, I suppose it did sink in, and I did get a little bit anxious. So went back up, and that's when I got the news. Floored.
And what diagnosis did you have?
Triple negative breast cancer at 36 years of age. Yeah. Never in a million years would I have thought that that would have happened to me.
Yeah. And I often find as well, knowing about your story for so many years and knowing of others, like triple negative breast cancer, it's not a huge amount of research. There hadn't been a lot of research done. There is now more research coming down the pipeline. But it's one of those subtype breast cancers where it's the age old chemo, surgery, radiation therapy. That's all that's on offer.
Absolutely. And I didn't, I suppose, I wasn't aware, you know, what the treatment plan was for cancer. In fairness, Janice, she took a pen and paper and she wrote down a number of things on the paper. And there was a couple of different forms of treatment, and she circled chemotherapy. And at that stage, I just broke down. I just remember saying to her, that's the one I didn't want.
I know.
You know, so anyway, she's such a wonderful person. She was so reassuring. She said, I promise you that I will get you right. It might take a year out of your life, but I'm going to get you there. And those words were enough to, I suppose, reassure me. So dust myself down, pulled myself together, and okay, bring it on.
Yeah. And how many weeks of chemo did you have to undertake?
So I had chemo every fortnight, and I had four rounds of Taxol and four rounds of AC. Okay. And it was super effective. So I had a 3.5 centimeter tumor, and it shrunk it down to a pinhead.
Wow.
So I had surgery afterwards.
Yeah.
And thankfully only had to have a lumpectomy. I say only, a lot of my friends and people that I've met have had to have a mastectomy.
Yeah.
So I felt lucky that I had, you know, a lumpectomy was sufficient for me.
Yeah. And it is very much, and it's something we've come across so many times, it's not one treatment fits all. It's now very much personalised and tailored treatment plans for everybody that's diagnosed, because regardless of your diagnosis, whether you have five women in the room who have had triple negative diagnosis, their treatment plan would be completely different because of their genetic profiling. You know,
absolutely,
and that's, I suppose, where we've come a long way in relation to how we treat different patients.
It was wonderful for me because, you know, it was stages. So I knew I had to get through the chemotherapy.
Yeah.
Then my next hurdle was the surgery and then the radiation.
Yeah.
But I knew there was an end in sight, you know, and this, you know, I knew within a year, just under a year, that I'd have all that behind me.
And knowing you when you were going through your treatment, I remember running was your passion. It was beforehand, and it became it very much so during your treatment. You still ran. You showed up and ran for Our Great Pink Run, leading out everybody in one of those years when you were going through your treatment. And is that something you would tell people, you know, to find, I suppose, the niche, find that piece of exercise that you like?
Absolutely,
and persevere.
For me, it was a savior. I had just run the marathon the October beforehand. I felt I was the fittest, healthiest I'd been in my life. I'm vegetarian. I rarely drank, don't smoke. I was exercising at that stage 5 times a week, you know, be it running or circuit training. I felt so good. That's why I was so floored when I was diagnosed. But in hindsight, I think back and I was so tired for a few months beforehand, but I thought it was off. That marathon took a lot out of me. But in hindsight, my body was tired, I think, because I had cancer.
Yeah. We have a podcast coming up next week about how mindset and trying to sort of have a positive mental attitude does help you through the kind of the dark days, because everybody is different and everybody copes in a different way. You know, so if was running your mechanism to kind of, right, if I go out here and do, you know, whatever it is, 20 minutes, a half an hour, whatever your body can hold up to, that kind of gets you through.
That was huge for me. Yeah. I had, being so fit beforehand, I think that stood to me with my recovery and my chemotherapy, because a few days after I would have my treatment, I'd meet up with the girls. So I'm part of a ladies running group called Kiltale Ladies on the Run.
Yeah.
It's a huge social outlet for me.
Yeah.
You know, we do our long runs every Saturday morning. I still stuck to that. The girls would be maybe running, you know, anything up to an hour and a half. I'd meet them for maybe 25, 30 minutes, yeah. Put on the bandana, get yeah. out. The coffee and breakfast was my goal afterwards, yeah. you know, and the chats. It was huge mentally for me mm-hmm. because I suppose two reasons. It was benefiting me health-wise for my body and my recovery, but mentally I felt I was keeping routine, and that was huge for me. If I had stopped running and, you know, I suppose lay in bed all day, every day, mm-hmm. It would have affected me a lot more mentally. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I tried to stick to routine, did the school runs, went to work, did all those bits, yeah. you know.
Were your Kilty ladies, were they shocked at your diagnosis? Did yeah. a lot of them sort of have to have a wake up call for themselves?
Yes, most definitely. Yeah. I was the first, actually, sorry, there was another lady that had been diagnosed with cancer beforehand. I was the younger, yeah. Younger girl in the group. And none of my friends were breast aware. None of them checked themselves. Now they all do. Mm-hmm. And I still get people contacting me, you know, through Instagram and that, saying, only before I came across your story, I found a lump, you know, I wasn't aware, you know.
So. And it is that staggering statistic that, you know, 23% of women are under the age of 50, you know, between 20 and 50 years of age, which is shocking.
It's huge.
It's huge. And, you know, we have Breast Check, the government agency that offers you the free mammos when you're 50 plus years of age. But there's nothing for younger people. So it is about making sure that women, regardless of their age, should be breast aware. They need to understand and know their own norm mm-hmm. and then check themselves regularly. Because as we've always said, early detection is key.
Absolutely. And I think that goes with any aspect of your health. If you feel any way, you know, unwell or something's a little bit different, you know, you need to see a GP. You need a second opinion on it. But now all the girls check themselves.
Brilliant.
Regularly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. Brilliant. Yeah. And that's it. You know, most people, that's why we're called More Than a Lump podcast, is that there are 8 signs and symptoms to a breast cancer diagnosis. You know, the lump is just one. There are 7 other signs. And oftentimes I talk to people and, you know, you'd say, yes, fatigue can be a real sign leading into it. But then it's like, you know, like this, the orange peel on the underside of the breast, or one breast slightly larger than the other, and things like that the public are not aware of. Mm-hmm. And hence it's one of our ambitions, I suppose, in Breast Cancer Ireland, through our education and outreach, when we go and talk at schools with, you know, TY classes and teachers and community groups, is just about understanding and knowing what good breast health is all about. Mm-hmm. If you know what's normal today, if the abnormality arises, you know, you go to your GP, it's spotted and detected early.
Absolutely.
Outcome is much more positive.
I think people are more open to speaking about it. It's not as embarrassing as it would have been deemed years ago. You know, we all talk about it now. People openly, even my daughter, I have a 16-year-old daughter. She was 11 when I was diagnosed. Yeah. She's very aware as well, you know. I think absolutely we're all at the stage now where we're all able to talk about it, and we're I continuously encourage them. I'm on their back the whole time.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Turning to you, Orla, I know we were going to talk about getting ready to eat well and hydrate as part of our preparation for Great Pink Run. But I wonder, could you talk to us about your own interactions with people going through treatment for cancer, and maybe chat to me about some of the advice that you give?
So I see people during and after in my clinic. And I suppose during, it's a different story, because if they're going through treatment, so for example, chemo, they will have, you know, you're really under symptom management there. Yeah. So it's kind of going, okay, what are your symptoms at the moment? And how do we use diet to help those symptoms?
Yeah.
It's also, and it's really important that people know that it's also about maintaining your weight and trying to avoid weight loss.
Yeah.
And I always say maintain your weight, and then I go, no, sorry, I meant avoid weight loss, because people do gain weight, and that can be part and parcel of, you know, the treatment can do that. But it's avoiding weight loss is such a big one. And I think people, it's about educating about that. So when it comes to symptom management and then avoiding weight loss, that's during. And then afterwards, especially now, I'm not talking about, there's no research to back up what I'm saying. But when I see younger women come in, there's a lot of, I think younger women can actually deviate towards nutrition a little bit more, and younger women can start perhaps using food in an unhealthy way and can build fears around certain foods. I suppose in some ways it's logical, you know, that if they can pinpoint it, oh, listen, I got breast cancer because I ate a lot of ham sandwiches when I was younger, or Prosecco with the girls. And if you can pinpoint and say that's why it happened, if you gave that up, then it wouldn't happen again. Mm. And there's an education piece there to help people not fear food and realize actually you can still have ham sandwiches and Prosecco. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of that education piece and what research is actually telling us.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's why one of my biggest pieces of advice for anyone is don't Google, you know, because if you Google diet and cancer, you get a whole heap of misinformation. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the misinformation is damaging in lots of ways because, for example, it's building in a fear around food where there didn't need to be a fear, or that person's now going to give up that food. And actually, that food is really important because that food, we know research, for example, dairy. Yeah. We know that when people consume more dairy, they're at reduced risk of cancer premenopause. Mm. Or foods high in cancer are protective both pre and post.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just that, because again, you got cancer because you were actually unlucky. You didn't get cancer because you didn't eat enough cheese.
Yes.
You know, so even outside of that, it's kind of going, okay, well, when you take that food out, are you actually unknowing inviting other issues? So if you take, for example, the dairy food out, are you now going to go down the route where you're going to develop osteoporosis and you're going to be cured from your breast cancer and maybe never have it again? And that will be a story you'll tell people. When I was in my 30s, I had found a lump. But you will have to stop running when you're 60 because you have this diagnosis of osteoporosis. So it's the worrying thing is that people Google it, they then have fears that shouldn't be there. They take something out that's actually protective, and they take something out and it leads to other issues. Mm-hmm. So that's my role, I suppose, is it's helping bust nutrition myths and kind of help people rebuild a relationship with food, especially if they didn't have a relationship with nutrition before and they want one, but they want a healthy one.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we don't want is for that person to go down a more what's called orthorexic route where it's about clean eating and, you know, and there's misinformation there. Because I would love to see a bit of research on that, on women and the risk of eating disorder, you know, after diagnosis.
Absolutely. And oftentimes, I mean, and you probably back this up, Denise, is during chemotherapy, you tend to lose your taste, your sense of taste. So that is, I suppose, a tricky one. And how would you advise people when they're going through their treatment, having chemo, to still eat healthily?
Yeah, so it's healthily is also you want to eat that's something that's good for your body and for your soul.
Yeah.
And you're trying to avoid weight loss. So it some people lose their taste and other people are like, that just tastes weird.
Yes.
And all of us are, that's metallic or no, that just tastes gross to me now. And I suppose I would encourage people to, this is the now, it will change.
Yeah.
And, you know, to keep trying these foods, but you have to experiment. And I would say one of the most important things is nearly to shop every few days or get someone else to shop for you every few days, because it's such a whirlwind when people are going through that. They're like, no, I love it today, you know.
Yeah. Or it's like pregnancy.
I was about to liken it, but I didn't want to put me. But it's very like that. They're just like, I can't look at eggs. And then all of a sudden they're mad for the eggs. So I would just roll with the punches, keep on trying. And sometimes people need lots of taste from their food in order to for them to get any enjoyment from food. And some people, they're quite the opposite. They're like, no, plain bland food. And some people deviate towards more salty food and some people more sugary and are sweeter tasting. So it's just kind of ask yourself, what is it that I want, you know? But again, you know, it's about keeping those energy levels up. So from a very basic point of view, I always get people to I say it, you know, in a kind of a tongue-in-cheek way, but don't eat naked carbs, okay? Dress them in protein or dress them in fats. The reason being is that if carbohydrates are released quite quickly into your bloodstream, your energy goes up and it goes down. And during this time, you want as much energy as possible because you're fatigued, whether it's radiotherapy or surgery or it's chemo. So it's about getting the carbohydrates and combining it. Okay, so you're having your toast, have your eggs, or have your peanut butter, or have your beans, that you're dressing that carbohydrate in a protein source, in a fat source, with some fiber, and just keeping your energy levels and protecting your energy levels as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. And then I suppose post-treatment and the likes of Denise out the other way, out the other side, and, you know, wanting to go out and exercise or wanting to, what advice would you give? Especially now, I suppose you've provided us with fantastic nutritional tips for the Great Pink Run this year. What's your advice to people who are starting off on a fitness journey as regards healthy eating? You know, good, like not diet per se, but good healthy eating.
Okay, so one of the most important things is just to focus on food is, and it's not all the time, some of the time. So that the bulk of your food is whole foods. It's not processed foods. And if you do that, you'll naturally eat more fiber, and 80% of us don't eat enough fiber. You'll naturally eat less sugar, and most of us eat too much sugar. And you'll naturally eat less salt, which most of us eat too much salt. Mm. And if you focused on whole foods, so foods are one ingredient, foods that you can rob from a farm, your diet is going to absolutely improve regardless of what else happens.
Yeah.
And that's probably the most important thing. I'd encourage people to focus on what to include rather than exclude.
Yeah.
Because if we, for example, go, do you know what, I'm going to cut down on chocolate, it's all you'll think about, and you'll obsess about it, and you'll think of chocolate all day long.
Yeah.
But if you go, okay, well, I'm just going to include more fruit, you might notice that if you're eating more fruit, you might be eating less chocolate naturally. Exactly. So
your desire for that sugar burst is gone because you're getting it in the fruit.
But you're not also mentally saying you're not allowed to have it. So it's about being inclusive rather than excluding things. So if you focus on those two things, you'd be doing well. And then just the carbs, protein, fats and fiber at each meal. So that would be, because I think people do that well at dinner time. Perhaps they have not enough too much carbohydrate at dinner time and not enough vegetables. But generally people have carbs, protein, fats and fiber at dinner. They don't necessarily have that at breakfast. They may not even eat breakfast. Yeah. And they might not even do that at lunch. For example, if you had veg soup and brown bread, healthy choices, but where is the fats, where is the protein? So it's always kind of including those bits and pieces. But I would also just be aware that there's a lot of nutrition myths, especially around diet and cancer. And you know, one of the bigger things that most people have to do is reduce their salt intake.
Okay.
But yet even you,
really?
Yeah, but that's much more important than necessarily the sugar element. But yet the sugar gets all the highlights and the headlines. So it's a funny one that, you know, there's a lot of nutrition myths out there. And the problem with me always having to bust nutrition myths is that I also don't get enough time then to say, okay, but the research is showing X, Y, and Z.
Okay.
And I suppose as well, and I say it which each person, I probably say it a little bit differently. But when people come into me and they've had a diagnosis of cancer and just say it's gone, they've got the all clear, I go, okay, well, you know, we have to protect you against all the other diseases now. And they're always a bit horrified. I'm like, yeah, like heart disease is coming to get you. You know, we need to start running this way. And it's just to be aware that sometimes when you get a diagnosis and a condition or disease, you focus in solely on that. We all do. I do. Everyone does. But it's just to know that, you know, sometimes we have to take a step back and go, okay, well, heart disease is a big issue for women.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the biggest killer of women.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of go a step back and go, okay, well, I need to nourish myself with regards to every condition or disease, not just this one that perhaps scares me the most.
The blip that has landed on my doorstep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And cholesterol. Everything is, you know, it's a vicious circle then, you know, as you get older, you have to watch your cholesterol, therefore you have to watch the foods that you take in as well to avoid having any medication.
Yeah. So, and I think it's unnecessary medication because I suppose, you know, there's medication that some people and breast cancer survivors will be on medications quite often for life, and it's going, acknowledging I need that, but I don't want to add more and more and more things here. And diet can help with a whole ream of things, and including mental health. And we know that if we eat better, a Mediterranean style diet with omega-3s, lots of fiber, that it has a really positive impact on our mental health. So it's not just looking at it again from a physical health point of view, but a mental health point of view as well.
Yeah. Well, my goodness. Well, I've had a lesson now today, so thanks for that. I'll be certainly looking at my own intake. And I suppose one of the big things, and while you're both here, is I suppose we're in the midst of Great Pink Run preparation. We're getting ready. People are out there, you know, starting their fitness regimes. I mean, one of the key things about Great Pink Run is it's not necessarily an event just for those that have been diagnosed with breast cancer, because while it affects the individual themselves personally, it's the knock-on effect to their families, their friends, you know, the communities that they live in, the work colleagues that they have with them. And it's a great opportunity. And especially, I suppose, this year, because we've been virtual for the last 2 years, it's lovely to see us back in a physical sense in October, the 9th and the 16th, because it allows people to come together again and be that pink tribe that they've always been. I mean, there's a great sense of camaraderie. I mean, you know yourself, Denise, having led out one of the years and your family on the sidelines mm-hmm. cheering you on. I mean, it's hugely emotive.
Oh, it was incredible. It was one of the most emotional experiences I've ever had. It was just, the sea of pink was incredible, but also it was just the element of love and support and encouragement mm-hmm. from all these people for the likes of myself, and the support of my family or everybody else yeah. that was, you know, yeah. is affected by it. It was just, it's amazing. And I really recommend that everybody should take part yeah. in it.
And you don't have to be a marathon runner like Denise to take part. No. You can be a walker like me, or you can bring your toddlers in a stroller. Like, it is something for everybody. I remember over the years, we've had one gentleman who's done it every year up until 2019 when we had to stop, Paddy Beauchamp. He's now 84 85. I mean, dressing in pink, the most yeah. extraordinary pink costumes he would come in year on year, that his daughter would help him source. But he was out there doing his 5k, doing his 10k. But it is everybody. It's men, women, children. I mean, we know statistically breast cancer affects 1 in 9 women during their lifetime. It does affect 1 in 1,000 men. It's rare, but, you know, it still is there. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I often find, you know, with men, I often say a lot of men, be they partners or husbands, were the people who detected their yeah. partner's yeah. cancer. And so it's so important that men and women understand good breast, understand what they're looking mm-hmm. for, to aid each other. And Orla, tell me this. So for somebody that's about to take on the 5K, or the 10K, in fact, who is new to running and new to getting themselves prepared, what advice would you give them from a nutritional point of view?
Okay, so from a nutrition point of view, you need to focus on the two main things are hydration and carbohydrates.
Okay,
so carbohydrates are king. Carbohydrates are the petrol we put in the car. It doesn't really matter if you have protein that day. It doesn't really matter if you have fat that day, or even some fiber. The most important thing is carbohydrates and water. So I would encourage people in the lead up to make sure they're well hydrated. We've all gone out for a run and you're like, I don't know why, I just feel unbelievable, like a gazelle today. And there's other days we plod like an elephant and we're like, going, what is it? And that's probably those two bits. Okay, it's your hydration wasn't as good, and your carbohydrates, you didn't have enough. So with carbohydrates, we store them, our tank for that petrol is in our muscles and a little bit in our liver. So we need to make sure that we're eating carbohydrates, especially the day beforehand. We're having them at every meal, and we're having them the morning of the run. With hydration, I would even focus on it in the few days leading up to it. And everything counts. Don't worry, tea and coffee are hydrating. But anything you can suck up through a straw really is a fluid and will add to it. So, but make sure you're getting the water in too. On the morning, you're likely to be nervous. Very few people aren't nervous before they go for a run, and you can often see the port-a-loos are quite full and there's a bit of a queue before you go out to race. So I'd encourage people to pull back on the fiber, especially in the morning before the run. So often people would be like, I had a bowl of muesli and added extra nuts and seeds and loads of fruits, and you're guaranteed to have the yeah. scutters if you do that. So what I'd encourage people to do is pull back on the nuts and seeds, pull yeah. back on the fruit and veg in the morning of the run. Keep it plain, keep it simple, and, you know, quick release carbohydrates. In other words, processed carbohydrates are probably the best thing to have that morning. Okay. So hydration and carbohydrates, focus on those two things, and you're going to not only run well, but when we run well, we enjoy it a little bit more. Yeah. So that's important. So if someone is walking it or running it, and if it's 5 or 10K, it doesn't matter. We all want to enjoy it as much as possible.
Definitely.
And we do that if we're well hydrated and we've eaten enough carbohydrate.
And then post run.
Post run, well, the number one natural sports recovery drink is milk. So what we usually recommend for people is a pint of milk, because it's got that elusive 20 grams of protein that we're looking for, which stimulates our muscles and our bones to grow and repair in response. It has water and electrolytes in it, so we rehydrate well. So milk is more hydrating than water. And it's got carbohydrates that help refuel the tank. So refuel our muscles and our liver with carbohydrate. Depending if you're running a little bit longer, so the 5K, a pint of milk is fine. If you're running 10K, or if you're not very fit and running 5K, or running 5K extremely fast, you might need a pint of milk and some fruits or a cereal bar with that. And, you know, that could be a smoothie either, which most people tend to love, or chocolate milk or a strawberry milk is the other one. But certainly a pint of milk is a great recovery. And then what I'd recommend is just following up with a meal quite soon after. If you are having alcohol, I'd encourage you to avoid alcohol until you pee. Okay, so if you are going to have a pint or a celebrated Prosecco or a rosé or something, just make sure you pee first. So drink enough water so that you urinate, and then you can have it.
Why?
Because you don't want to have it in a dehydrated state, or else you end up in a state. is my
That's so very interesting.
It is. It's just my rule of thumb. You can have it once you pee.
Yeah. And Denise, as always, Great Pink Run is a real family occasion. You know, we have them young and old and in pushchairs and on trikes, etc. Who will you have with you this year?
Oh, well, every year I have my Kiltale ladies, pink and black. The girls are going to join me. My work colleagues always take part. And of course, my family. Hopefully I can get my daughter back out now. She's 16, so we'll see if we can get her away from the phone for a while. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
So we look forward to seeing you, my dear. Great Pink Run. And you, Orla, with your family, please God. Just run, walk, jog. That's what Great Pink Run is all about. So thank you both so much for joining our podcast today. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Goodbody, Ireland's longest established stockbroking firm, supporting initiatives that have a lasting impact. The information in this podcast is based on the personal stories of those we have chatted to. If you are concerned in any way, please contact your GP immediately, or you can contact us at breastcancerireland.com.